Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events. And it's Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, gold today, hey, up $3. $3 on gold at $11.67. Silver still hanging out at that $16 level. We need to see some... We need to see it move up there a little bit, or we might see some additional pressure on it. But it just swings. We had a high of 1605, just can't maintain it. 1597 for silver, 0.03. Platinum was down $9 today at 990. Palladium was down 4 at 682. The USDX today up 1.4 at 96.94. Crude oil down once again, 78.78 at 43.20. And you have the paper markets today. And we have, you know, just, the markets are just kind of strange. The Dow's down 40 points at 17,582. The NASDAQ is down 4 at 5,030. The S&P is down 5 at 2,065. 10-year yield today is down 0.03 at 2.03. The euro is 110, down 0.11. And the Asian markets, Germany was down 1%. Japan was down almost 1%. So not a lot of action going on. Your greed is beginning to creep into the markets over the fear. Doesn't seem to be a lot of fear, trending. And, of course, we see that in the gold markets. Nothing happened in September, so I guess they gave us another month, but it's almost like the markets are waiting for something to happen is how I see things. And let's see, what else did I want to mention? I guess that was about it. We had some reports out today. Walgreens, they're buying their rival, Rite Aid, and of course the shares of Rite Aid today jumped about 40%. So that might be all good and fine and dandy, where they'll have a little more clout in order to get some better prices for some of their prescriptions. However, you're going to see job losses, as you usually do when you see big corporations like both Walgreens and Rite Aid merge. So we'll be seeing jobs there. And what else that I thought was a little interesting? IBM, federal regulators are actually investigating their accounting and some of their business practices here in the states. both here in the States, the United Kingdom, and Ireland. The company made the disclosure in a filing with securities regulators, saying it learned of the investigation in August. They're cooperating, of course. Everybody declines to provide further details, but the IBM does say it has a rigorous and disciplined process for the preparation of its financial statements and the reporting of revenue. It's that fuzzy math. Everybody knows what to do in order to get the best numbers they have, but their company shares were down about 4% in trading after the disclosure. And everybody knows IBM was struggling with some extended sales declines. They just haven't been able to shift away from or into the newer areas of computers. And but hey, what do you do when your shares go down, Al?
Well, I suppose you could buy them yourself.
That's
you could
exactly
be the greater fool, and if the public won't pay what you think they're worth, you can pay that yourself.
Well, they announced separately that Tuesday it will increase its share buyback program by $4 billion. So, hey, when your shares are down, what do? You increase your buyback program. You know, make those shares go up with the remaining shares. So, you know, you go out and borrow the money for, you know, zero interest.
Yeah, that's
you know,
point.
From the bank, and they can borrow and increase their shares and bring back. It's just, this is what your stock market is based on. This is
a lot of things are based on the idea that people in positions of power can borrow money for next to nothing and invest it wherever they want and thereby move markets without incurring a whole lot of risk. Right? They can do it on a cost-free basis, and if they're big enough and smart enough, they can make markets move around and profit from it without the attendant risk of interest on the money you borrowed. It points out that some of the market manipulation, the concerns we've had about the prices of gold and silver, for example, being manipulated and controlled, they are to some degree, that manipulation is to some degree made possible by the Federal Reserve holding interest rates down next to nothing. Federal Reserve were, if the interest rates were 5% or say 10%, they couldn't afford, it's arguable that they couldn't afford to manipulate the markets to the same degree they do now. Price of precious metals might rise. And I've seen reports that suggest that if Janet Yellen raises the interest rates, the primary interest rate, if she raises it, it would be good for gold. They've had other arguments. They have other bases for making that argument. But just the same, you know, cheap money allows you to manipulate the markets. Expensive money should slow it down. So
that's what they're doing on all their dividends. They're out there borrowing money to pay their dividends,
mm-hmm.
and they're hanging on. That's why all these corporations have all that cash, because they're not using their cash. They're using the U.S. government's backing, the taxpayers' support, and say, hey, here, we'll pay you dividends, even though our corporation sucks and we're not making any money, and so forth. But hey, we'll pay you a big dividend, and that's what people are living on, these dividends. And a lot of these retired people are living on these. Well, those dividends aren't going to be there forever.
And they're also living on the illusions that are created by this low interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you stop to think about it, it is likely, it's at least plausible that if they raise interest rates, there'll be less money to invest in stocks, and the stock market will tend to decline. I think that's what most people expect is going to happen. Well, it follows that part of the reason the stocks are up as high as they are is because interest rates have been irrationally low for 9 years. That's what's holding the market up, at least significantly. It may not be the only thing that's holding the market up, but at least it's a big chunk of it. Truth of the matter is, what would the Dow Jones be right now, Melody, if we hadn't had virtually zero interest on borrowed cash for the past 9 years?
You'd probably be looking around 8.
It might
maybe
be.
Maybe 10.
It might be that low. That's a fact. And, you know, so we are buying in, people are buying into that. We talked a little about this yesterday. We had this story from one of the newspapers where some woman had invested $200,000 in a partnership agreement with some shale oil producing agency. All right, now she's lost half of it. She's got two kids to raise. Her husband's died and so on. So we've got a sad story here. But part of the reason she went into the oil industry, which is essentially a risky business on its best day, you're drilling for oil a couple thousand feet in the ground. You don't know what you're going to find. Not for an absolute fact. You don't know what you're going to get. Maybe it pays off, maybe it doesn't. That's risk. All right, that's about as risky a business as you can get into is drilling for oil. There may be riskier businesses, but it's one of them that's got to be deemed to be basically risky. Why do people take risk? Because they can't make any money by leaving. They can't make a profit by leaving their money in a savings account because the interest rates are too low because the Federal Reserve has set the prime rate close to zero. So it forces people to take risk, and inevitably when you take risk, sometimes the risk manifests, and all of a sudden your investment disappears, or a big chunk of it. But we're doing that risk, and that includes investing in the stock market, taking that risk to invest in the stock market. Why? Because interest rates are so low that you can't make any money in savings accounts. So people sit back and say, well, I guess I'll put some money in the stock market. Well, that helps to support the stock market and create an irrational and illusory high in the stock market. People are there. Why? They've got to go into more risky investments. And the whole point here is that if the Federal Reserve were to raise interest rates to something reasonable, not just raise them, they're scared to death. They say they're scared to death to raise them by 0.25%. All right? But if they were to bring interest rates, prime interest rates, back to something reasonable, like, say, 3%, I have no idea what would happen to the stock market. And, Melody, you might be right. It could fall to, 8,000, 10,000, hard to say, but it certainly wouldn't go up. So it tells us that those of us who are inclined to invest in the stock market that this is an illusory investment. Sooner or later, I don't know when, but sooner or later, the Federal Reserve is going to have to restore the interest rate to something reasonable like 2, 3%, maybe more. And when it does, stocks prices are going to fall. They're going to be corrected to a significant degree. No. The Fed is behind the stock market's highs, the lows in gold and silver, and much of that chicanery can be traced back to a near zero interest rate. What else we got, Melody? Melody. You have to push the little mute button, Melody.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
This came out today, late this afternoon, didn't have a chance to read, but U.S. officials, Iran has been invited to participate for the first time in international talks over Syria's future. Syria's future. Iran has yet to reply. And the next round of discussions is expected to start Thursday, continue through Friday in Vienna. Washington held out the possibility of Iran joining the discussions in future, but now is offering a seat. I don't know if this, I can't imagine this is a good thing.
I think whatever's going on with Iran, the government of the United States, the Obama administration is just giving away the farm.
Yeah.
They have done everything they can to accommodate Iran. We're getting virtually nothing I'm able to see in return for it. Nothing obvious. I mean, they claim we're going to have a right of inspection, but we can't inspect military bases and a few other odds and ends. This has been a situation, this has just been a giveaway. This hasn't been a negotiation. This has been a surrender or a giveaway. And here comes Iran again. I mean, clearly they are defeating what might be construed as the primary interests of the United States of America. They're getting by them. And it's not just because the Iranians are so clever. It's because we have an Obama administration that appears bound and determined to give away American interests.
I mean, here is a country that has had all kinds of sanctions against them. These were the evil people of the world, and all of a sudden we're buddy-buddy, hey, can you join us in discussions with what is going on in Syria? I mean, it's just, it's really bizarre. I mean, it truly is. I get that the agreements that they did, the treaties and so forth that they did with Iran, yeah, you're right, they gave away the farm. But one thing is giving away the farm. It's something else to bring them in on your discussions with, I can't see anything good coming from it.
Well, they're just trying to prove to the Muslim world that we are a Muslim-friendly nation. You folks, you Muslims, come on down and move into the United States, because we're just going to wait here with open arms, and you're going to be able to set up your own no-go zones, and it will be like an invasion, but it won't be a real invasion because our government is helping to make that invasion possible. You know, there was a time when if a foreign people came in and tried to set foot on your shores, you would shoot them. You would shoot these people, and they would shoot back. It would be a war. They would try to take some of your land. You would try to defend your land. We don't defend our land. We're not shooting anybody. They don't need guns to invade this country. Why? Because our government is cooperating in the invasion. We don't have to have any gunfire. We can sit back and sing Kumbaya, and the Muslims or the wetbacks or whoever else wants to come into this country, you just come on in, go to a sanctuary city, collect welfare, we'll support your children, we'll take care of you. It's insane. And you know what it is ultimately? Is a war against the people of this country that's been waged by your own government. They're destroying this government. Your government is destroying this country. You know, there is no way that the Muslims are ever going to be assimilated into the culture of the United States of America. They're never going to give up their Muslim faith. They are not coming here as poor refugees. They're coming here as invaders, and when there's enough of them, they'll chop your heads off and say, good, let's get rid of these idiot Christians. And to some degree, maybe they got a point, because the idiot Christians don't have enough gonads to fight to defend themselves, their nation, or their culture. We're going to play nice with everybody, and all you're going to do is be hustled, conned, taken advantage of, exploited, and destroyed. And people say, oh, couldn't we sing Kumbaya and all be friends? No, you can't. And somebody needs to get that message across the American people where they understand, look, this is the way the real world works. And if you're willing to let any fool come into your house and eat your food and sleep with your wife and kick your kids around, you're crazy. You're crazy. Suicidal. And maybe treasonous. In the case of the government, they're treasonous. The average person who goes along with it, they're stupid. They should not be allowed. You know, I've got a video that I saw just today. France is having a terrible problem with the Muslims in that country. They have set up a multitude of no-go zones where if you're not Muslim, you can't go in that vicinity of France. If you're French, you still can't get in. And if you go in there and you're not Muslim, they'll beat the crap out of you. Right? And as a result, the French are apparently decided to stop singing Kumbaya, and they're going to, some of the people, not the government, the Muslims support the current liberal government, and so the liberal government is in support of them. In fact, they're helping to build, they're financing a Muslim mosque somewhere in France, and they don't understand, or maybe they do understand, that the name of the mosque is above the door, the entrance, but it's spelled in Arabic, so most French people can't read it. It means conquest. That's the name of the mosque. And they're taking over the streets, and they're beating and assaulting French people walking around, trying to walk in their streets. They'll beat them up. And the government's not doing anything about it. And I guarantee you the same thing is going to happen in this country if you folks are stupid enough to allow more Muslims into this country.
Well, here's it, Al. I'm going to break up. We need to go to break, and then I saw an interesting article about how Europe is now looking for weapons, but we need to go to break here.
Well, they're not getting mine, I'll tell you that.
Let's go to break.
All right, I'm Alfred Ask here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we are going to break for some commercials. We'll be back in a moment. Hang on. Bye.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And 90% sober, folks, still a great buy. $100 face value at $1,400. It includes your shipping costs, so give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. And make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, or you can sign up from the website, dgscoins.com. And today, for those of you who have already signed up, we sent it out today instead of Monday. My web person said that more people open it on Tuesday than Monday. So we just did a little bit of a test to see if that would hold true, but I believe it should go back to Monday, and if the person wants to read it on Tuesday, you may. But so we'll be working on that, so we'll probably get right back to the regular schedule for next week on the Monday issue of American Survival from Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And remember, 90% silver. We got gold eagles. We got some beautiful buffaloes in, 1 ounce gold buffaloes, selling at the same price as an American gold eagle. So great buy on those. But you have to give us a call. And, you know, before the breakout, we were talking about Europe. Austrians that are arming themselves at a record rate in an effort to defend their households against feared attacks from Muslim invasions. Tens of thousands of these refugees, they poured into Austria from Hungary and Slovenia. They're heading on to Germany and Sweden. And you have these wealthy European countries that have just opened the doors. More than 1 million is going to end up in Germany alone by the end of this year. People aren't happy with this. And these are just estimates from the German government, and you know they're always wrong. You know, it's always less than what really comes in. So, and in Germany, in order to obtain a firearm and ammunition, both in Germany, Britain, Denmark, and the Netherlands, it's practically impossible for the average citizen. Germany requires a psychological evaluation, the purchase of liability insurance, and verifiable compliance with strict firearms storage and safety rules. And a self-defense is not a valid reason to purchase a gun in these countries. The laws in Austria, while still strict, are a little bit less overbearing. So, but there was a Czech TV report confirms that shotguns and rifles have been flying off the shelves in Austria. And the Austrians who haven't already purchased a gun, hey, they're all sold out. So, you know, so people are concerned with their safety, and people are going to do what they need to do in order to protect their families. And so
they're being introduced to the real world. All right, if you're going to let your wealth just be, let anybody, I mean, it's like dealing with a swarm of locusts. And you're crazy, if you can stop them from coming in, stop them. You know, this is not just a refugee problem where you sit back and say, oh, the poor Muslims, they're just good people, like they're just like all the rest of us, and they're good people, and they're just refugees from the war that's going on there. They are not refugees from that war. They are the consequences of a Muslim faith in a Muslim nation that keeps the people in an almost medieval condition. They are not fleeing from the Muslim faith. They need to understand that. I mean, if they're coming to the West and they want what the West has, then they have to wait, then they have to embrace what the West is. They have to embrace the same cultural values. They're not going to do that. They have this idea that they can just move into Europe and then they can be rich. No, you can't. You can't be rich and embrace and strictly embrace the Muslim faith. It is a primitive religion that'll keep people locked down. I mean, I've seen reports that they don't generate more than a couple dozen books in the Muslim world every year. There's nothing new. The only thing they need to know is what's in the Quran. And insofar as that came out, I don't know, 800, I don't know when they wrote the Quran, I'm only guessing, but 800 AD, something like that. I'm not sure. But it's been around for, what, 15 centuries, something like that, 14, 13, I don't know, over 1,000 years. They have this theocracy. If they want to believe in it, that's fine. But they have to accept the fact that if you're going to embrace that theocracy, the consequences of the premises you find in that theocracy are going to cripple your economy. You're going to live in mud huts. You're going to live in a diminished economic capacity if you are sincere about that faith. And if you want to move into the Europe, fine, move into Europe. But if you want what the Europeans have, if you want that standard of living, you're going to have to become Christians. If you want to maintain your Muslim faith, you're going to live in a relatively impoverished condition. And they'll sit back and they'll blame people around them, but the truth of the matter is, it's the fault is not in our stars, Horatio. The fault is in our premises. We embrace certain ideas, certain beliefs. They lead us inexorably. Logically, those premises take us to certain conclusions. The essence of wisdom in this world, in my opinion, is the ability to look at a particular idea today and say, do I want to believe that idea or do I not want to believe that idea? And if the only way you can select is to say, gee, I think it'd be fun, let's do this, I think it'll be fun, you're headed for trouble. Wisdom looks at the idea and it says, this idea, if I embrace this idea today and I say, this is going to be one of my premises, this is going to be one of my core beliefs, this will inevitably lead me next week, next month, next decade. It will lead me to logical consequences, which maybe I want or maybe I don't want. And depending on your ability to perceive the consequences of the premises that you accept today, you can do well in the world or you can flounder. It's the idea behind wisdom, in my opinion. Want to be a Muslim? Be a Muslim. I don't have an objection to it. But it shouldn't be in this country. They are not compatible with the fundamental ideas of this country. They will never be assimilated while they maintain their Muslim faith, and I don't believe they intend to give it up. If it were up to me, I wouldn't let another Muslim into this nation. Not one.
What's next, Al?
I don't know. We've got an article here from The Street. It's kind of interesting to me. And the headline is, stock market remains headed for 2007 or 1929 crash. All right, what they're saying is that there's a prediction here that we're headed for a crash. But is it going to be relatively modest, comparable to what we saw in 2007, 2008, or will it be more like what we saw in 1929? The article says some observers posit that the stock market behaves randomly and that there is no reliable predictive framework that allows us to know when the uptrends are ending and the downtrends are near and vice versa. The right kind of technical analysis, however, can yield useful predictions. The decision support engine, all right, this is a relatively new concept, but it's the same thing that we see from Gerald Celente and some of the other people who predict what's happening in the future of the economy. They assemble a bunch of different inputs, the unemployment rate, the velocity of money, the fear index, the price of crude oil, the population demographics. I don't know. God only knows how many. I think Gerald Celente uses a couple dozen different factors that he integrates into his decision support engine. I don't know that he calls it a decision support engine, but one way or another, they take all of these different factors and balance them and to create hopefully reliable predictions of what's going to happen in the future. This article is talking about the decision support engine, a concept that you can Google if you care to. And they say a technical analysis system that tracks a wide range of data and looks for historical patterns that are likely to repeat themselves. This decision support engine has yielded accurate predictions about the broad marketplace since early August. Okay? That means this thing has been effective for a little over 2 months. That's not enough to inspire much confidence. But it is enough to inspire a little curiosity. It's something worth considering. And the article goes on and says, here are just a few of the articles describing the decision support engine's forecast that were published before the market's behavior confirmed them. All right, they give us three. August 7th this year. Stock market is getting ready to plummet, but volatility will soar. All right, they predicted this on the 7th, and shortly thereafter, the prediction came and turned out to be roughly correct. August 21st this year, short sellers should take profits today as markets plunge. Again, shortly thereafter, markets took a dive. Short sellers, if they took their profits, would have done well. If they didn't, they got hurt. September 29th this year, stocks will make a multi-week bounce before the coming market collapse. In other words, they're saying stocks are going up, but it's only going to be for a few weeks, and then we're going to see the collapse. And they go on and they say, last Wednesday, there was an article titled, Five Reasons the Stock Market Will Move Sharply Lower Soon, which highlighted the decision support engine's latest forecast. This prediction still awaits the market's manifestation. All right. They're predicting they got five reasons why the stock market's going sharply lower. Hasn't happened yet. It's waiting to see if the market actually agrees and manifests to see if this prediction is accurate or not. In August, we asked whether this year's big sell-off would be like 2008 or 1929. Updated information shows there are still reasons to expect either of those scenarios, but right now the 27 2007 analog has the slight edge. They're saying something like 2007, 2008 is a little more likely than 1929, but it does say, we asked whether this year's big sell-off would be like 2007 to 2008 or 1929. They are operating on the assumption in August, and here we are 2 months later basically, that there's going to be a big sell-off this year. And we're getting down to where there's only a little over 2 months left for that prediction to be true. They're not saying we're going to see it in the first quarter next year, second quarter 2017. They're saying this year. That's interesting to me that they are betting that this is going to happen now in the next 2.5 months or thereabouts. Not even that, a little over 2 months. If this market's path, if this is the market's path, right, meaning the 2007, are we going to have a problem sell-off like 2007? The Standard & Poor 500, a rise off the August 21st low, has mimicked the rise on the March 2008 low into the lower high of May 2008. That May high marked the last escape before the next 10 months, so Standard & Poor's lose 53%. They are predicting that there's going to be a significant, and they're not the only ones to do so, and I wouldn't say that this is necessarily, I'm not going to argue that this is the most reliable predictor you can find. But still, they've had three that they mentioned turn out to be true in a two-month period, and that's interesting. Because most people, if they make a prediction and then they brag about it, they say, ha-ha, I predicted the 2007-2008 crash. I predicted that back in, 2005 or 2006 or something. These guys are making predictions on a weekly, biweekly, monthly basis. Not predicting that there's going to be a crash in the first half of next year. They're predicting that there's going to be a crash in the next 2 months. Huh? I don't know that they're right. I'm not arguing that they are. And given that this, what did they call this? Decision support engine. Given that this decision support engine has only been online for a couple of months, not much of a track record. You can't put your faith in it exactly. But how many, making decisions, making predictions that turn out to be roughly correct on a weekly basis? That's kind of interesting to me. Most people predict we'll see something next year. We'll see something in the second quarter of next year. The predictions kind of tend to be distant. This thing is making predictions. This machine, this computer, is making predictions that so far have turned out to be reliable in terms of just days and weeks. That's impressive to me. So what's it all mean? I don't know. It's another one of those things. We hear reports from a lot of people that we are sitting on the edge. A lot of people believe we're sitting on the edge of some sort of economic correction or collapse. And I think that's what this article is about. We're either headed to something like 2007, 2008, which we might deem to be a correction. All right? That's probably not accurate. We came close to a crash. We didn't quite have it. But 1929 was a crash. We're either going to 2007, 2008 correction, or we're headed toward a 1929 crash, and if this is to be believed, we're going to be there in time for Christmas. So, what shall we do, Melody? Shall we take our commercials?
Let's do that, because I'm going to talk about this budget deal and how Boehner, again, another secretive process they used to negotiate the two-year budget. So we'll talk about that when we get back.
All right, we're going to take a break. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article from the Associated Press, today's Associated Press, and headline. I mean, I laugh about this, but this just makes me furious. When I read this article the first time, I am just infuriated. I mean, this is one of those things that gets you jumping up out of your chair, marching around the room, and getting ready to yell and scream at anybody if there was somebody there to listen to you. You know, you're ready to, you're sorry. Rah, 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 rah. Well, here's
the
headline.
Watch your language, Al.
Yes, I will try to watch. I'll watch my language, but I'm not.
You'll watch it come right out of your mouth.
Yeah, right. We're going to put it out where everybody can see it. There won't necessarily be any secrecy in this report. All right? Not my report, at least. We'll watch and see. House GOP leaders reach budget deal with Obama White House. Now, House GOP leaders struck a budget deal made with the White House just before midnight Monday aimed at averting a government shutdown. As if that's a bad thing. You know, they make it so. What's wrong with that?
It's not even about that, Al.
And forestalling a debt crisis. Now, how are we going to forestall the debt crisis? By going deeper into debt. Debt. That's what made America strong. That's what keeps America strong and growing stronger. More debt, and then more debt, and then even more debt. And that's what the government is doing. They're going to cut a deal where Obama can go deeper into debt, as if that is going to help anyone. Is there anyone listening to this program who understands that more debt is a good thing? I mean, do you want to be in more debt or do you want to be in less debt? It's common sense for ordinary people. All right? Average Americans, we understand, I don't want to be in more debt. Debt is bad. I want to get out of debt. I'm tired of paying it on the mortgage. I'm tired of paying it on the automobile loan. I don't want to get deeper into debt. I want less debt. Government wants more debt. And that is their solution here. Speaker John Boehner is making a final appeal to restive Republicans. Pass the hard-won agreement with President Obama before Representative Paul Ryan assumes the speaker's job later this week. They're trying to get this out of the way before Ryan has to deal with it. All right, and I don't believe this is because they're afraid Paul Ryan would be against this deal. They just don't want him to be the one saddled with responsibility. They're going to blame this on Boehner, and he's going to be gone. But Boehner encountered immediate resistance when he laid out the plan Monday night. His plan is for members to vote on the deal Wednesday. They're going to vote on this tomorrow. The budget pact, in concert with a must-pass increase in the federal borrowing limit, would solve the thorniest issues awaiting Ryan, who is set to be elected speaker on Thursday. We don't want Ryan to have to face any difficult choices and act like an adult. All right? We want Congress to just be a fun place for Mr. Ryan, and let's not deal with any difficult issues.
And Ryan is ticked.
You know, Ryan is ticked?
He's ticked. He blasted Boehner for the secretive process that they did. You know, he says, hey, you know, he says, no, the process stinks. You know, he didn't even get a chance to go through the details until it was released of any of these agreements. So, no, Ryan's not going along with it. He's
well, good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear
that. Not
that
I'm a fan of Ryan.
From what I read in the Total article, that they were just trying to get this stuff done before Ryan had to take the blame for it. It might have, I was only guessing, I didn't know, but I was speculating, maybe it was part of Ryan's deal. Said, yeah, I'll be the speaker, but don't saddle me with this one. You got to get this done before I don't want to take responsibility for this.
Maybe that was behind the scenes, but then Ryan comes out, you know, and he stinks. He says, you know, we're coming up against a deadline, and he says, and that's, you know, that's not the best thing, but, you know, we can't do the people's business this way, so...
It goes on and says the deal would also take budget showdowns and government shutdown fights off the table until after the 2016 presidential election, which means what they're saying, we want to pass a law where nothing happens from now until at least the next election. And then we'll let those idiots worry about the problem. But we're not going to behave like adults. We're not going to behave responsibly. We are going to duck the issue from now until sometime after November 2016. And they will pass a law to it where we can duck the issue. All right? That's the argument here. Where are we? And it would be, they think that they're arguing this would be a potential boon to Republican candidates who might otherwise face uncomfortable questions about the messes in the GOP-led Congress. Again, what they're trying to do is make sure politicians don't have to behave responsibly. Don't ask me any tough questions. We may have tough issues, but we don't want to face them. We're just, I'm going to cover my eyes, my ears, and everything else, and we're not going to deal with the problems. We're just going to leave them until somebody else is elected after the 2016 election. It is irresponsible. This whole country is in peril, and the solution that's coming out of the Obama administration and the Republican leadership is let's duck the issue. Let's not be adults. Let's duck the issue. You know, one of the problems with this thing, when you look at this and you understand that what they're going to do, they want government to be able to borrow more money, which means what? We're going to go deeper into debt, which means what? We're going to leave more debt for our children and our grandchildren, which means what? It means that it's arguable that your congressman, your senator, your president are a bunch of pederasts. They are literally screwing children right now by means of leaving them with debt that nobody wants to be an adult and deal with. Congress doesn't want to deal with it. They don't want to be responsible. They don't want to stand up like men and women and say we have a problem and we have to deal with the problem. They say, let's duck it and we'll leave it for the kids. We'll leave it for the grandkids. We'll leave it for another generation and screw them.
It's not going to last another generation.
That makes the Congress nothing but a bunch of pederasts.
It's not going to last for another generation.
Oh, I get that, but the point is their intent. They're ducking. Instead of dealing with the issue, let's duck it. What else?
It's an issue that can't be. It's really an issue that, you know, they have to let it go all the way to the end. Now, I mean, I'm not supporting them and what their decisions or anything like that, but you know what? They're between the rock and a hard place.
Oh, I agree with that. But how'd they get there?
Well, we know how they got there.
I didn't put them there. I didn't put them there. They volunteered into that place. Now they're saying, "Oh, gee, this isn't fun anymore." The Republicans put us in this position. The Democrats put us in this position. Both parties sold us down the river with this debt-based monetary system. And
years and years and years ago, it all started.
I agree, but at no point has any hero of the Republican Party or hero of the Democrat Party stood up and made an effective objection to the problem, with the possible exception of Ron Paul. All right.
Well, it'll be interesting.
He wasn't effective, but he made an attempt.
It'll be interesting to see if this is brought up to the debate tomorrow.
It's a Democrat debate tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
In Colorado, of all places.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Put on by CNBC.
Gonna have to call Las Vegas and see what's the line. What's the line on whether or not they'll deal with any tough issues? Here, this article continues and it says, Congress must raise the federal borrowing limit by November 3rd or risk a first-ever default. Right? And that's a bunch of crapola. Our government has been defaulting on the debt ever since it became the Federal Reserve policy to cause 2% inflation every year. So long as we have 2% inflation, you hear the ads on this program every time you listen to the program. The purchasing power of the dollar has lost 96% over the course of the last 40-odd years. That's government defaulting on its debt. Inflation is government defaulting on the debt. Our government has been defaulting again since it stopped redeeming gold certificates with physical gold in 1933. It's been defaulting on the debt ever since they stopped redeeming domestic paper dollars with physical silver in 1968. It's been defaulting on our foreign debt ever since it stopped redeeming foreign-held dollars with gold in AD 1971. Our government has been persistently defaulting on the debt for longer than I've been alive. But those shameless, conscienceless SOBs are claiming they must pass a new debt ceiling in order to avoid our first ever default. They are liars. Every one of them who tells you we're avoiding our first ever default. We've been defaulting all my life. It isn't a new event. It isn't new. It's just whether this is the first ever obvious default. It might be that they can't get away with it this time, but nevertheless, default is far from uncommon or unheard of. Government does it persistently. What else have we got down here in the article? It's the emerging framework would give both the Pentagon and domestic agencies 2 years of budget relief of $80 billion in exchange for cuts elsewhere in the budget. They want to give the Pentagon a break, all right? Rather than cut the budget, which they'd previously promised to do, they said, we've got to give the Pentagon and we've got to give domestic agencies a break because you can't cut government. Where would we be without the government? You know, the government made this country. The government is what we need. The government is tearing this country apart. Right? But they want to give a Pentagon and domestic agencies 2 years of budget relief.
Huh? Yeah, we talked about this just the other day where something went to the White House for the Pentagon and Obama vetoed it, had the cameras, all the actions, all the photo ops and everything. He says because it didn't give enough to the domestic agencies. So here it is. You know, okay, that was part of their deal. You know, we'll send this and we'll test them. And so now they put it together and, you know, it is shameless. It is amazing. It really is.
Yeah, first, take the government down across the board, in my opinion. We don't need the world's biggest. We have more military. We spend more on military than the next four or five nations in the world. There's nobody that's close to us, all right? We can afford to have a Pentagon that doesn't waste money like it's bullets coming out of an automatic weapon. Right? Somebody's got to start functioning like a sniper, and you fire one bullet for one kill. Let's be effective rather than just spray and pray. That's what we're doing in the Pentagon. And take them down. Take down the domestic agencies. If you want to have a domestic agency, have it in the states. Stop relying on the federal government to do everything for us. Here's House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican, California, told Republicans, let's declare success, all right, because this deal is, it's not done yet, but it's proposed. And I'd say instead of declaring success, let's declare treason. Let's say what it really is. These jackasses in government are destroying this nation, all right? A chief selling point for the GOP leaders is that the alternative is chaos. Huh? How did we get to a point where if the government can't borrow more money, we go into chaos? How is that even possible without the complicity of the Republican and Democrat parties? How did we get into a situation where they're telling us We got to do this or the whole thing's going to blow up in our faces. It's irrational. It's crazy. It's evidence of malfeasance, misfeasance, negligence, treason committed by our government to drag us into this situation. And the public, this is the Republicans will probably respond to this. We are in such a deep hole that if we don't get in even deeper, the whole thing's going to fall in on us. And again, the solution to our debt problem is what? To avoid the chaos of our debt problem, our inability to pay our debt, the solution is go deeper into debt. That's their solution. This is like saying the solution to the suicide problem is stop giving people 22 handguns and give them 9mm or 45s or 357 magnums instead. Let them shoot themselves with bigger calibers and maybe that'll end the chaos. It does say the conservatives in the conference who drove Boehner to resign were not ready to fall into line. I'll bet that they do before this is done, but we'll see. Who knows? We may find some... You know, you can't just sit back and say, if we do the right thing, we're going to face chaos. Because if you don't do the right thing, you're going to leave that chaos to your children and your grandchildren. Somebody has got to behave like a man. Somebody's got to stand up and say, all right, we've made some terrible mistakes, and now we have to pay for it. And nobody wants to do that because it'll be the end of their political career. Because the public doesn't want to hear we've made terrible mistakes, even if they know it's true. And they're concerned in Washington, oh my gosh, if we tell the truth and we do the right thing, we'll be thrown out of office. And then we have to get a real job and start working for a living. They don't want that. And so they're going to sit back and say, well, they're going to justify that in order to avoid the chaos, which is inevitable in our overly indebted circumstance. But in order to avoid the chaos right now, we'll put it off by going deeper into debt and leaving the mess for our children and our grandchildren. John Fleming out of Louisiana, Representative John Fleming, said, this is again just the untamed time you have this big, big, huge deal that'll last for 2 years, and we were told nothing about it. This is another one of those deals they're doing in secret. It's like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's like whatever the agreement was when it was being proposed with Iran. Don't let the public know how we're going to sell them out until it's a fait accompli, till it's a done deal. Then maybe we'll let them figure it out, but not in advance. There's more to this article, but we're out of time before we're going to get to it. But I'm just saying, this is just the sort of thing that infuriates me to a point where how this can even be tolerated is beyond me. Somebody needs to contact their representatives and their senators and say, look, this is a no-go. Someone's got to take responsibility. It's time for all of us to take responsibility. It won't be fun, it will be painful, but it's better we take it as adults than we leave it for children who don't have a clue to what's going on right now. We're out of time, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.